Hello, and welcome to the Jazz Podcast. Today we're talking to Matt Roberts, trumpet player, composer, and conductor. This is one of his tunes, Barnard's Loop. And that on the tenor saxophone you can hear, Julian Siegel. Matt Roberts, welcome to the Jazz Podcast.
Yes, Rob, how you doing?
I'm good and I'm excited. This show has been a long time coming.
Oh, man.
So let's get straight to work. Tell our listeners who you are, in case anyone doesn't know, which is very likely.
My name is Matt Roberts, and I guess I'm a trumpet player, but I also do a lot of arranging and a lot of composing and a bit of conducting recently, which has been quite exciting. But yeah, kind of a bit of a jack of all, to be honest. But yeah, and I live in London, and yeah,
let's do that thing
with these, like, absolute legends.
Yeah, of course. You know how in some films, like, we reveal a window into what you're doing now and then it zooms back in time. Yeah, let's do that, like a prequel. So Right. The conducting is Reuben Fowler's project, the Steely Dan. Is that right?
No. I've got nothing to do with that. That's
really
his baby. Yeah. That's totally his baby.
Oh, bro. I thought you were full on conducting the band.
No. Not to my knowledge. I mean, I don't know.
Excellent. What a fantastic start. Well researched, straight in.
Nice.
Right. So tell us about the conducting. What's going on?
Oh, man, that thing. Well, the conducting started when I wanted to conduct my own music.
Yeah.
When I was at Trinity and I was writing big band tunes and wanting to just put bands together to rehearse them.
Yeah.
And then I just kind of learned how to conduct out of necessity, really. You know,
yeah.
my music's not totally straightforward, so I needed to be able to do odd meters and, you know, pauses and writs and rals and all that kind of thing, and also just, like, I kind of got together rehearsing chops, which is a whole thing as well, you know. So got it together. It's a work in progress, that, because, you know, it never ends. But then I just kind of became known for someone that could do that. You know, and so, like, if, you know, I remember my friend Ben Mallander had a big band on his final recital, so he asked me to conduct that, and I was like, yeah, happy to do that. And then conducted a few youth bands, you know, that were playing my music. And then I remember me and you were involved in a thing, that Engines Orchestra project.
Yeah.
And that first album, I got asked to conduct that, and that was cool. So that was my first time conducting, like, an orchestra.
Yeah.
Like, you know, with string players
and
stuff.
That was big.
That was big, yeah. And then, I mean, and then that ended up, when we did it at the Sage and Gateshead, I was conducting Royal Northern Symphonia. I'm like, what is going on here? This is absolute madness. And then, I don't know, it's just kind of become a thing. So, like, I've been doing this thing. So on Thursday, actually, I'm flying out to Abu Dhabi to work with this Palestinian kind of crooner, really, called Omar Kamal. And he's MD'd by Quentin Collins, who's an incredible trumpet player.
Yeah.
And he kind of, when he MD's the band, normally it goes out like a 12-piece or something. And, he, you know, what little conducting there is to do, he can do it all. But when it's occasionally these big, you know, these big arts festivals and there's money for a big orchestra and stuff, he's like, well, it's a bit too much to be doing that and to be playing my part. So the first one of them that I did was in Lebanon. We did one with it was with a Lebanese National Symphony Orchestra. So that was another one where I'm just like, oh my God, this is madness. And then the one in Abu Dhabi's with it's like a British big band, so, like, loads of people you'd know, like, you know, Leo and Tom Walsh and all those guys.
What? And, how is everyone getting these gigs? How many podcasts do I have to make?
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, yeah. So that's mad. And then it's like a string orchestra. I think it's also from London. They're called the United Strings of Europe.
Right.
So I think it's kind of like a trans-European like string orchestra, but that are based in London. So yeah, so I'll be conducting that next weekend. So that's pretty mad. So yeah, now it's got to a point where I'm kind of just getting the odd call for orchestra, like conducting gigs. And I think it's that thing of like a gig like that or a gig like the Engines thing that we did, you wouldn't want a classical conductor doing it. Cause I mean, I've done crossover projects before with classical conductors and they f it up big time because they don't understand that when the groove is beginning, you know, it's like that the time is there, you know, the time is solid and the drummer and the bass player and the rhythm section are given the time. You don't pull the time around. Yeah. And they want to go all like Ravel on it. And it's just like, no, mate, you can't do that. And also just understanding things about like open repeats and all right, this is an improvisation, you know, when is the right time to cue that backing figure? And, you know, the fact that the drummer's maybe not playing the same groove round and round, can they keep the form? Things like that.
Yeah.
And similarly, you know, in the jazz world, there's maybe not a lot of people that can conduct. I mean, I still feel like I'm a pretender, but yeah, there's not a lot of people that can do it, even half do it. And then even if they can, they've probably conducted big bands and they might not be able to talk to the string section about, you know, the phrasing of the bowing or something like that, or saw ponticello and all that nonsense. So I don't know. It's kind of, I've kind of been in a few different worlds over the years and it seems to be something that kind of where all these little things, these worlds that I've been in kind of overlap. So it's kind of cool and I love it. I really enjoy it. So Lord, mate, continue.
That's really cool. I think what I think about your conducting, your rehearsing, it's not just the keeping of the time, like you said about rehearsal technique, and then it becomes more than that because people want a project where you're going to then get the best out of the music and serve it to its very best. And that requires someone like yourself with a lot of experience and a lot of exposure to a lot of different genres, you know, to be able to cope with whatever it is that, like you said, it's a lot more than just conducting. This is about experience and confidence and all kinds of stuff
that's very kind of you to say, Rob. Yeah. Yeah.
Cause I mean, otherwise, like there's nothing stopping me from just being like, oh, well I'll conduct, see you later. But you know, it's not marking of the bars that will undo me. It'll be all loads of little things that,
yeah,
you know, a bit like, never mind. I was about to go off on a massive tangent. So now let's go back in time. And, let me ask you, how did you get into music to start with?
Well, I just remember, so I'm from a place called Darlington in the Northeast, and that's kind of in the heart of kind of brass band world.
Right.
I don't know how many people that listen to this will know about that whole tradition, but there's an incredible tradition of brass band music from the Northeast that also exists in like Wales and I think Norton and basically anywhere where there was coal mines.
Because in Manchester, when I was studying, there seemed to be quite a lot of it, you know.
Yeah, I don't really know about Manchester as a mining thing, but I think they definitely, I think the Royal Northern, didn't you have like a brass band course or something?
Yeah, there was a lot of competitions held there and, you know, lots of the trumpeters who studied there, it was my understanding that playing in a brass band was something that they were totally aiming for.
Wow.
You know, as a career choice.
Wow, that's crazy. Career choice, mental. Yeah, it's heavy. I mean, it is unbelievable. Honestly, some of the playing in that world is just absolutely phenomenal. I mean, it was incredible to be around that. But yeah, but anyhow, there's all that going on. And there was a really cool like music service. So Darlington's in County Durham. So there was a County Durham Music Service. Mm-hmm. And they just made sure that basically every kid, well, I don't know about every kid, basically every school had the opportunity to give their kids, I think, free or at least very, very cheap music lessons. I think they were free to begin with, but then after like a year, you had to pay. And I rang my mum about this and to say, how much was it? She said something like £5 a term.
Wow.
£5 for a term of music lessons.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
when I used to work at Barking and Dagenham, they would pay, you could pay £20 a year.
That's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's incredible. it's brilliant. I mean, you know, they were group music lessons and they were probably only about 20 minutes long. But, you know, that's all I had before I went to music college, you know, so mm-hmm. it did the job really, you know. And, you know, it was just really social. And that's the other thing. As soon as, like, basically you could play like five notes and they're like, right, boom, get in a brass band, you know. So you could barely play the instrument and you're sitting in a band and you're kind of learning in that environment. So straight away I'm getting kind of rehearsal etiquette and like kind of collective time kind of and tuning and intonation and playing with a good sound is kind of really drilled into you, you know, from an early age.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of where I kind of learned. So yeah, I think I was 7 years old and the guy came around and does a kind of like aptitude test, or maybe it was more of an enthusiasm test. I'm not really sure. But, and yeah. And then basically I remember I got given a letter to take home to my mum, and I remember showing it to my mum in the playground and she was really happy. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, so there's a lot of positive reinforcement at home as well. Amazing. And then, and yeah, so that was great. And then and that was it really. I was kind of in that world until when I was maybe 15 or 16, I maybe joined the youth big band.
Yeah.
And then when I was in, and I loved that and I loved the soloing and kind of, I'd get the solos on, they'd give me the solos on to do on in that. And that was, I used to love that. And then I kind of, I think that the guy that led the band was kind of like, oh, you know, if you like that, you should check out Miles Davis. And I was like, oh, right. Okay. So, you know, did the usual route of kind of Blue and then kind of all of Miles's discography. And of course, so many greats played with Miles. So through that, going to Cannonball and Train and Bill Evans and all that. So yeah, it was, that was it.
How old would you have been when you were checking out Miles for the first time?
Yeah, probably like 15, yeah, 16 maybe. Nice. I think I was in sixth form when it was kind of given to me. So, I mean, quite late really for probably compared to most people that you're chatting to on this podcast, it was quite late in the day really. I mean, but I did love it. And Miles played the trumpet, which was what I played. So yeah. It was like, wow, brilliant. You know, I'd love to do that, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah. And cause I kind of never really like dug the whole classical thing. And I kind of, it made me think that I wasn't maybe cut out for music because, you know, at like school, there's like people talking about grades and stuff. And I was just like, I think I did my grade 5 when I was 15 years old. And yeah. it's just like, so there's, you know, I was thinking there's no way I'll do my grade 8, you know, just can't be asked. And then I was looking around at universities and music courses and they were all like, oh, you know, must have grade 8 on your instrument. I was just like, oh. Well, I suppose I won't do that then.
Yeah.
But then like with the jazz thing, I was like, oh, you know, this is cool. You know, it's about a freer thing and whatnot. Of course, jazz is a, like intense, like discipline as well. I'm not, not messing around with that. But actually, maybe at that point, I didn't quite realize that.
yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe I went down the wrong path. But no, it's all good. No, of course, I loved it.
So did you ever do grade 8?
Nah, no way. I didn't do grade 6.
No,
that was it. I mean, I didn't really start properly shedding until music college. Honestly, so, until then I was coasting really.
Where did you audition?
Just at Leeds.
Right.
I mean, I'd never heard of Trinity.
Yeah.
I'd never heard of Trinity or Academy or anything like that. I'd heard of Guildhall because in my youth band, there was a great piano player who I'm sure you'll know called Rick Simpson.
Yeah.
And it was crazy because no one, to my memory, like no one where I came from could play jazz at all or had really any understanding of it. And I mean, some incredible musicians, incredible, like certainly brass players, as I said, but somehow he just like could play so well. And we were just like, what is going on? And I remember him listening to Keith Jarrett records and me being like, who the hell is this guy? You know, Keith Jarrett. I mean, how do you hear about this music? But yeah, he went to Guildhall, but I mean, I didn't think about even auditioning because I just thought, well, that's where people like Rick Simpson go, you know?
Yeah.
But I knew a couple of people that had gone to Leeds, and they said they'd had a great time, and I visited it and I loved the vibe there. And so, yeah, I auditioned there and yeah, I was delighted to get in and God, I had a wicked time there. It was just an unbelievable place. Honestly, it was absolutely incredible. Just amazing teachers, great vibe in the, on the course. Like people were amazing musicians and yeah, it was just, yeah, it was great. So I loved it. So that's when I really started shedding. And honestly, when I started Leeds, I didn't really know what a 251 was. And so there was a lot of demystifying, but the Leeds course was great with that. You know, they didn't really assume any prior knowledge. It was kind of right from the basics. I remember having these harmony lessons with a guy called Trevor Vincent that were just so unbelievably thorough. And by the end of the course, you know, by the end of one term, it's like, right, every single person that has attended these classes now completely knows, you know, all their chord scales. They know all about dominant alterations. They all know what a tritone sub is, you know. And then, I mean, even like after first year, I think he kind of covered like arranging for big band and stuff. And that was brilliant because I always wanted to do that, but I didn't have the skills to, or the knowledge. I didn't even know where to start, you know, so many different voices, different parts. But honestly, everyone could do a big band arrangement by the end of that course. Everyone on the course, you know, even if you were, even if it interests you or not, it was just so thorough.
Yeah.
So yeah, I had a great time. Great time. Some pretty musicians. It's great. Great city as well. Oh, love Leeds. Absolutely love Leeds.
Yeah, it's a really cool place. I love the feel of it.
Mm.
So then after Leeds, what did you do?
Well, I kind of got to the end of Leeds and I mean, I kind of thought, I mean, you know, I was actually, you know, I was getting work as a trumpet player. You know, I was living off being a trumpet player in Leeds. So, which was crazy to me because, again, I went to do a degree in music, really, because I thought, oh, I'll be a music teacher. Because I love my music teacher at my competency school. And I just thought, oh, I'd love to have Mr. Franklin's job, you know. And so I just thought, oh, I'll do that and I'll do a PGCE and just go straight into teaching back at home. But then I kind of like, yeah, just thought, God, this is really great. And I really like Leeds as a city. So I don't want to move away from Leeds.
Yeah.
And also, you know, that was a bit of a slug those 3 years. And I still feel like I need a few years to take in what I learned and, you know, bring that up to date. I'm still trying to get together all the stuff that I was taught.
Yeah.
Then, but yeah, I just kind of, yeah. So I didn't go straight into it and just hung out for a bit. And so I was making a living from being a trumpet player, but I kind of thought in terms of like jazz, my contribution is not going to be as a trumpet player. Yeah. You know, I just thought I'm not going to be, I mean, like, for example, the trumpet players that I knew that were living in London were like Ruben, because, you know, he's from Wakefield. So there was a bit of overlap before he started at Academy. I was at Leeds and sat in with a Doncaster big band. He's from that whole scene. And Matt Robinson, fantastic pianist as mm-hmm. well. He was also from that.
Nadine Tawori,
I think he did his A levels at Leeds because they've got a kind of FE department.
Oh, cool.
But anyhow, but the trumpet players I knew were Ruben. I knew Tommy Walsh because Ruben had introduced me to him. I knew Rich Turner, of course, who was from Leeds.
Yeah.
I knew George Hogg. You know, I knew Freddie Gavita. I mean, so I'm thinking, you know, I'm not gonna do what they're doing. You know, I mean, these guys are really serious. So I just thought, and also I really enjoyed composition. You know, I'd always enjoyed writing, to be honest. I mean, as soon as I remember my parents bought a piano when maybe I was like 10 or something, and I just absolutely loved it. And I used to write little tunes. And I love the composition aspect of the course at Leeds. Leeds was great for that. I mean, I did as much composition there as performance, which I think is quite rare.
Nice.
I think, most music college things, unless you're obviously on the composition course. You know, it's very much like performance orientated, which is also great if you want to do that. But I really enjoyed that. And
Marked on the stuff as you went along.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. So my final recital was worth the same as my composition portfolio.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, yeah, it was great.
So when did you move to London?
That would have been in 2009.
How long and after Leeds?
That 1 year. So I had a year in Leeds of college.
Did you go to Trinity for a postgrad?
Yeah, yeah, that's it. So then I studied composition at Trinity.
Oh, cool. Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, man. Absolutely ridiculous. Absolutely loved it. You know, just again, just every day just thinking, oh my God, how lucky am I to be doing this and to be on this course and around this level of expertise. It was incredible. Yeah. I mean,
but
again,
not necessarily a jazz composition course.
No. I mean, it was pretty open, to be honest. I mean, there was people doing some pretty far out stuff, you know, some kind of like sound installations with like Max MSP and stuff like that, which almost made like writing for jazz musicians and having improvisation look like a really square thing to do. They were really into it. I mean, the head of composition there, Dominic Murcott, is an absolute legend, and he's just the kind of guy you want running the course because he's got no ego, you know, and he thinks it's all good, you know, so he gives a platform for everything. And there's people doing all kinds of stuff, people writing, you know, choral music and string quartets and orchestral music. You know, I got to write all that stuff when I was there. And then, but you've also got, people just making electronic music, people like me writing jazz stuff. But I mean, yeah, as I said, you know, even I only wrote, I think I submitted one big band tune per year, but because it was a 2 year course, but the rest was like, string quartets and orchestral tunes and choral tunes. And it was brilliant. So that's when I kind of got the string writing thing again. I'm not going to say I got it together because obviously work in progress, but that's when I kind of learned the kind of fundamentals of that stuff, which was incredible. I mean, God, I got roasted on that course. I mean, because everyone that was on that course had done like an undergraduate in classical music. Because that's the thing. It's like the brass band thing, you're playing like hymns and maybe some marches, but it's not, you're not playing Mozart or Beethoven or Mahler or that stuff. So it's not really like in the Western classical tradition. It's like a different thing in a way. So, you know, I'd be in a lecture and people are like, you know, of course we can all whistle the second subject to, you know, Mozart piano concerto in A, right? And I'm just what?
Yeah.
I mean, there was just so many times I just got roasted. It was unbelievable. You know, I remember there was this great orchestration teacher called Stephen Montague, who's an American guy, absolute legend, really, really funny, great guy. And he just taught us these orchestration lessons and he was absolutely brutal. And I remember we were looking at this Charles Ives score. And at the bottom of the score, it said, strings may or may not be muted. And he's like, notice this at the bottom of the score. How curious. Strings may or may not be muted. Did anyone notice in the recording whether the strings were muted? Matt, what do you think? And I'm just like, now this is in like the first week. And obviously I'm a trumpet player. So like I'm thinking what a trumpet sounds like when a trumpet's got a muting, which is like, it sounds like a different instrument, right? Yeah. You know, completely different.
Yeah.
But like a string mute is a bit more subtle. So I'm like, well, they sound like strings to me. You know, so I'm going to say, I'm going to guess, no, they weren't muted. And then he just goes, okay, guys, hands up if you think the strings were muted. And I turn around and every single person in the room's got their hand up. You know, it was just like ass whooping 101.
Yeah.
Oh, it was incredible. But I loved it, mate. Honestly, it was incredible. And oh, the course was brilliant. And oh, yeah, great. Loads of opportunity to have your work performed. It was brilliant.
That's awesome. That's a big deal if you're trying to learn to write.
That is the way to do it. Yeah. Honestly, I mean, you can study. I mean, I remember the first time I knew I had an orchestral piece. I was fussing, looking through scores, like looking at different, you know, orchestration combinations and trying to find out the exact timbre that a clarinet in unison with an oboe sounds like and how different it sounds like to if you put the oboe in unison with a flute or, you know, all this stuff. And honestly, I've shedded it. Honestly, I just buried myself in these orchestral scores because I was so nervous about it. Yeah. I actually had like massive writer's block for that. and it's one of the few times I've had writers, but eventually wrote this tune. But I learned more in having that one tune rehearsed than like all that shedding I'd done with my head in the scores. Like, it's just because you hear immediately, you're just like, oh, that's too high for the French horns. You know, oh, I shouldn't have put the trombone on the ninth of the chord. You know, you just kind of like, you know, you just learn stuff immediately. It's like, as in, like, as soon as the downbeat goes off in the first rehearsal, the first read through, you're instantly like, oh yeah, shouldn't have done that. Or like sometimes you get the positive thing. You like, oh, that bit that I thought was kind of like meh actually sounds really great.
Yeah.
And so it's that constant feedback. And then I remember the second orchestral piece I did was like infinitely better. And then, yeah, I've been grateful to have lots of opportunity to orchestrate for orchestra since then. And so it's been a constant, you know, you're constantly learning until I guess there's becomes less and less surprises.
Yeah.
So now when I'm getting pieces rehearsed, I'm less surprised, you know, by stuff. I'm like, yeah, that sounds good, like I thought it would, and
yeah,
oh yeah, that sounds a bit rinky because I rushed it and I should have spent more time on that, never mind.
Yeah.
You know, it's just one of those things. But yeah, it's it was brilliant. That's exactly how you need to learn to write. It's just get on with it, just get on with it and do it. You know, don't wait for the phone to ring, just, you know, put a band together. And that's the beauty of music college is, you know, that there are all these musicians that are just hungry to play, and you can just book a room and just be like, ask some string players, you know, hey man, I've just written this string quartet, would you mind like playing a little bit of it, you know? And 9 times out of 10 they're well up for it, and they'll give you feedback, and it's incredible. So yeah, I had a great time, man. Yeah, really good time.
You know, talking about this thing about surprise, we're really surprised. I don't know, have you seen The Last Jedi?
I haven't, and to my shame, and I'm actually a Star Wars fan, but no, that's not the first of the new ones, is it? I've seen that one.
Yeah, this is the second Force Awakens. Of the new one. Right. That's
no,
right.
I haven't seen it, sorry.
Well, my point is that John Williams is 86 years old now, and is the score, it's so fresh, it's so interesting. It sounds like he hasn't ever, like, written anything before.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. I don't know where this man's brain, I don't know how this is happening.
Might need to check that out.
Yeah, it's well. I've the soundtrack is on Spotify. If you've got nothing better to do one night, for those, you know, for our lovely listeners as well, you know, if you're getting a bit tired of us, just go and stick on The Last Jedi, because it's. I mean, when I'm 86, if I'm turning out anything, I'll be thrilled. But full on film scores, the size and scale that he's writing, I just don't understand.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I imagine he has a bit of help, but. Nevertheless,
I reckon you're right that I'd like to think that by his age and ability, he just writes like the melody. Like,
yeah,
here's a little tune. Now sod off and orchestrate it.
Yeah. Like that guy that designed the Shard in London, you know, he just drew like a triangle on a piece of paper. And then like a whole team of people had to like run away and be like, okay, like let's like try and figure this one out. But now I'm sure with John Williams, I mean, there's no doubt about that guy. In fact, I heard a story from, there was another great orchestration teacher at Trinity that told us a story that's worked a lot in Hollywood. And he told us a story about John Williams. He basically said that he has the best time of anyone he's ever seen, because when you're recording an orchestral score, sorry, a film score, you've got, it works in like cues. So, you know, you might have like a 1:30 cue. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in that time you've got X amount of bars. And as the conductor, you've got to basically nail the bar lengths.
Otherwise it doesn't fit up.
Yeah.
It doesn't match up with the film, which is on behind you, which you can see when you're conducting your orchestra to record your soundtrack.
Yeah. But also, I mean, there might not be obvious hookups, you know, to what's going on on the image. You know, I mean, I don't know. I'm sure there's a knack to it, but apparently he was the absolute master of this. You know, he'd be like, you know, the cue would end literally to the millisecond of when the cue ended on the screen. It was absolutely incredible. But I know that's a bit hearsay for you. But yeah, I mean, he's the master, no doubt.
So I had a question for you about, what percentage of your career now then would be like composing / conducting / playing a trumpet? Does that work? Can you split it up like that?
Oh yeah. I mean, it's mostly playing the trumpet, 100%. I mean, well, not 100%, probably about
Excellent. We've had a half hour talk about comparison.
Everything else,
100% John Pickwick.
I don't know, maybe like 70%.
Right.
Between 60 and 70% maybe.
Yeah.
And I reckon maybe like, I don't know, maybe a bit less than that now. I don't know. It's constantly changing really. Yeah. But yeah, maybe, I don't know, 20%. Is like arranging and orchestrating and composing, maybe a bit more than that. And then about, I don't know, about, yeah, a small amount is conducting. I mean, the conducting thing, I maybe do like 6 conducting gigs a year. Thereabouts, you know. And then the rest, I do a bit of teaching. It's probably about, I don't know, 10, 15%. There, I don't think that all adds up to 100, by the way, but so you get the idea. Yeah.
Oh man. So you have your own band as well.
Yeah, I do.
It's called Matt Roberts Biggish Band.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I've got two big bands, a big band and then the Biggish Band. But the big band's kind of dormant really. I'm not really doing anything with it just because I've been so busy doing other people's stuff that I haven't really written any new material, and I don't really just want to gig old material to death. I like kind of gigs to be really fresh. And that's kind of why I started the Biggish Band, because my Biggish Band, well, there's a number of reasons. One was that I wanted to play. I was upset that I wasn't doing any playing, because when I was at Trinity, oh my God, the course was such a roast that my horn did not get touched for 2 years. You know, I mean, fortunately I was gigging a lot, but that's a kind of barely kept my chops in, but it was bleak. I mean, and then I finished college and it's like, right, God, I've got to make a living on the trip. So I had to really shed. But I was kind of like a few years behind. So that was kind of a thing of like, oh, get me playing some jazz again. And then in the Biggish Band. And then I wanted the charts to be like more like you just count them off and they play down. So there doesn't need to be a conductor. So I can sit in the section and I can play.
Yeah.
And also I've done over the years, I've done loads of like Ellington transcriptions and Gil Evans transcriptions and stuff that basically doesn't really sit next to my original music.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a kind of like chalk and cheese. Obviously I'm influenced by those two guys in particular massively. But it's a very different musical language, really, when it comes down to it. And so I wanted to do that stuff. Basically, I wanted to have a band that was a bit more like, I suppose, American sounding, you know, like proper, like just burning swing. And book some quite different musicians, you know, that I hadn't really worked with, and have a bit more of a, like a small band aesthetic. Because I swear, like with big band, it's so easy to like, when it gets to the blowing, not be as interactive as you would be in a small band, because people are wearing a different
definitely.
Hat. People have still got their heads.
I hate
like
that as well. That's well yeah. hard.
Yeah, yeah. And so I was like, that was kind of a thing. I was like, I want to start a band where it's got a small band aesthetic, but it's a big band. So it's a slightly reduced lineup. But to be honest, that difference is not in the really in the sense that there's less musicians, but it's more the way that I've written and done the arrangements. It's just, there's more scope for that freedom, and the players that I've booked as well aren't necessarily players you'd associate with big bands playing. I mean, they smash it, but it's, you know, they're not like, you know, Ian Thomas or, you know, they're not like an obvious like big band guy that you'd call. It's more kind of like, yeah, kind of hardcore jazz guys really.
And
that's good fun. I really enjoy it. I'm grateful that people want to play my charts, you know. It's incredible, and grateful that people want to book me, like, yeah, good old Paul Pace absolutely smashes it.
Spice of Life and Ronnie's, is that right?
That's right, yeah. So, you know, I mean, he's given us quite a few slots at Ronnie's now, like main set slots downstairs.
Amazing.
Which is crazy, you know. I mean, again, you know, just loving it, man. And that's great. But the thing with that, honestly, we do a gig a year. I mean, it's so much. Again, it's that thing of, I want every gig to be fresh. I want there to be a freshness there.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I won't do a gig unless I've got a lot of chance that I want to like, you know, a lot of new charts. So like, and obviously big band charts. I mean, well, the thing with the biggish band, I can kind of churn them out because generally I'm doing like arrangements of Wayne Shorter tunes or Horace Silver tunes or, you know, whoever, and I'll do a gig. So like last London Jazz Festival, we did a Wayne Shorter tribute. The year before that, we did two nights back to back, and one was a Ellington tribute, one was a Gil Evans tribute.
Yeah.
We'll probably do a Kenny tribute at one point, maybe a Monk tribute, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's cool. And also given a gig a theme, I don't know, I feel like it's really cool for the audience as well that, you know, they're going to get into, oh, right, this is what this person's music is all about, you know, and, or this is like, especially someone like Wayne, you can, you know, we start with like a Blue Note thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Witch Hunt or El Gaucho, you know, from Adam's Apple. And then we move through to like the kind of later Blue Note stuff, like Lady Day from The Soothsayer, and then do like Elegant People, which is a Weather Report tune. And so you're kind of like showing them the progression of that individual's career. And I like talking between the tunes as well, you know, telling them about what was going on.
That's the best bit.
and who was in the band and all that stuff. And yeah, so I enjoy that stuff. It's fun.
So who are your biggest musical influences from all these, like a mix of your growing up listening to this stuff, but also things you're going back to pick out now, you know, like to base your own music on?
Oh man. I mean, I don't know. I mean, well, so 100% Miles Davis on the old, well, not just, not just as a trumpet player, but also definitely as a trumpet player, because he's an absolute genius trumpet player. I mean, there's this myth that Miles like couldn't play the trumpet. Absolute nonsense. I mean, he was ridiculous, like absolutely ridiculous trumpet player. And so, yeah, I mean, I still go back to him, but the thing is, you just can't sound like Miles. I mean, no one's managed it. There's that guy, Wallace Roney. He's pretty killing. He can kind of get that sound a little bit, but other than that, it's such a unique sound. And so I've kind of like given up trying to copy Miles, but I kind of listen to him for pleasure. But I guess the people that really spoke to me that I found actually like really useful when I was like listening to jazz is kind of the hard bop people, like Lee Morgan, Fats Navarro, Clifford Brown, Freddie Hubbard, those guys. I haven't quite got to the Woody Shaw level, but I mean, no doubt he is outrageous.
Yeah.
And then in terms of writing, I mean, yeah, Ellington, Gil Evans, all the obvious ones. Man, Maria Schneider, I think she's brilliant. Like, I've shedded her scores big time. I mean, she's amazing. Vince Mendoza, again, I mean, these just the obvious people, really. And then, like, you know, some classical stuff. Well, a lot of classical stuff, really. I mean, Ravel and Bartok and I don't know. Some of the second Viennese school stuff is absolutely bonkers. Back on the jazz thing, John Hollenbeck as well. I think his music's brilliant. Dave Holland's big band. In fact, yeah, that was kind of the impetus for the biggish band, because he totally has that small band vibe in his big bands.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like the energy when it gets to the blowing. And I guess he's built that big band around his quintet.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like all those people are in his big band, and he's just added a couple of people in each section to make it a big band. But really, it's still the Dave Holland quintet, you know, or sextet or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I mean, the blowing in that is just monstrous. And the arrangements, it's brilliant. Like, really, it's really elegant, not over, you know, he's not overwritten stuff. It's just great, you know. Really fun to play, because that was another reason why I started that band, because I'd taken some of those arrangements down off the records, like transcribed the arrangements, and I was showing them to Ruben one time. I was around Ruben's having to play, and he was like, oh man, you got to get this stuff played. I mean, I love this music. And I was like, yeah, all right, yeah. So I've kind of put a band together, and that's why it's kind of big-ish, because again, like the Dave Holland band is like three trumpets, three trombones, four saxophones. So that's why my band's that lineup as well. Cause the first gig was to play those transcriptions that I'd done. And then I did some other arrangements around it. And then, you know, now we still might play one of them, but now it's not just about Dave Holland now. It's about a bigger thing, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. So yeah, all those people, I'm sure I've missed them stuff. I mean, just general music though. I mean, like,
yeah,
just,
I mean, what I was just... the track at the start that we, that you sent me that we played?
Oh yeah. That was a recording from years ago, to my shame, that I haven't got anything more recent to send you, but that was from 2012, London Jazz Festival. And that was my big band. And that's, Julian Siegel was blown on that. Incredible tenor player. And that was an original composition of mine, called Barnard's Loop, which is
named after emission. Nebula.
You got it. Yeah.
I love that stuff. The one you
Ticking
did about
the astronomy boxes.
Oh, mate, don't even get me started. Or this pod's going to expand to 9 hours long. You wrote a piece, I think it was called New Horizons, or it was called Cassini. Yeah. And it started with the guitar harmonics.
Yeah.
I played that back at the Forge in 2011 or 12.
With Jack Davies' big band. Yeah.
And I've still got that tune in my head.
Oh,
it's
man.
It's never boo, 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 doo, 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 doo,
boo, doo,
doo, doo, doo. And the horn writing on that, the sax, that guitar melody is going, and then the saxophones in five. Ba ba doo, 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 doo. And I'm like,
it's mate,
so good that absolutely.
You recognize that. Well, that's amazing. Christ. You remember that. Well, thanks for playing it.
Well,
yeah, I couldn't make that gig, but I think, yeah, Jet sent me a recording, and yeah, you guys killed it.
Yeah.
But
Simon,
yeah, that's
Marsh
another
was on lead alto as well.
Oh, wow. Well,
just
he's the boss.
He knows the deal. Mm-hmm. So tell me, before we finish, do you have any hobbies outside of music?
Oh, man. Well, yeah. I mean, I guess I do a bit of reading and go swimming a lot and go to, like, usual London stuff, like go to galleries and, yeah, exhibitions and lectures. And so, yeah, I don't know. I'm just kind of pretty much interested in most things, really, like science and politics and philosophy and all that stuff. So that, really.
Beautiful.
All that stuff.
I love living here.
Oh my God, tell me about it, mate. Honestly, I have to wake up every morning pinching my chubby little flanks thinking, oh my God, I got away with it again. Do you know what I mean? I'm just like waiting for someone to tap me on the shoulder to be like, look, mate, the game is up.
Yeah. Out you go, son.
Yeah. But no, man, oh, I just love it. I think the community is just brilliant. Like, just any night of the week, you can just hear just unbelievable jazz. I mean, the level is just outrageous. Man, it's just bonkers, man. I love it. Absolutely love it. And yeah, I'm just thrilled that there seems to be a role for me in it. You know, I kind of never again, like when I moved to London to do the Trinity postgrad, I didn't think that I would be able to stay down and make a living in London, you know, because because the trumpet players that I knew, like down in London, were like Ruben, Rich Turner, you know, Tom Walsh, like Freddie, George Hogg, all these people. And I'm just like, these guys are ridiculous, like, players. Like, I just thought, is that just like and they're just the people I know. I just thought that was just a random cut of like London trumpet players. Obviously, as it happens, they are like, you know, or were in the case of Rich, rest in peace, Rich Turner, by the way, you know, were like the best, you know, I mean, they're just unbelievable players. I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, Gerard Presenza did a tour recently, touring, like promoting his book. He's written like a trumpet technique book. After he came to London, he was just like, you know, I've never known anything like what's going on in London at the moment for trumpet players. It's bonkers. And that's the thing. I mean, the people that have come up, like James Copas, I did a gig with him the other day. I mean, that, if you heard that guy, he's ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, he's world class. And Alex Ridout, she's absolutely killing it. Obviously, Laura Jurd, unbelievable. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just monstrous, really. And it's just brilliant. I find it so inspiring. It's incredible.
Yeah, man. Well, Matt, thank you so much for coming on the Jazz Podcast. It's been an enormous pleasure to sit and talk.
Mate, Rob, thanks so much, man. You're an absolute legend, man, yeah. Well, yeah, good luck with the Apollo project you've got coming up, man. It sounds great. I'm looking forward to hearing it.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, it's going to be a spectacular unveiling. Yeah, indeed. All right.
Nice one, man. Much love, Rob.
It's been a pleasure. We'll speak to you soon.
Speak soon, mate. Bye.
Bye.